We're doing the Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Shin Yud Chet. The Magen Midovna had been describing how a person can overcome arrogance. And the Magen Midovna had described that part of the reason that a person allows himself to become arrogant is because a person lives within a bubble. Within his own bubble, a person feels like he is great. Once a person looks beyond his bubble and he sees the giants, he sees the brilliance, he sees the gifts of other people, then he starts realizing, hey, wait a second, where are they and where am I? These giants who were whole in their traits, they had such fine character traits, and in spite of their brilliance and how exceptional they were, look at how humble, look at their humility, look at how they perceive themselves with such humility. And that wholeness that was a part of who they were, part of being so great is also being so humble. Because they constantly compared themselves to their master, the Holy One, blessed be He, how awesome He is. And so they recognized how minuscule man is, how small man is, the mere mortal who is born from a woman. So if they, who were such giants, were humble, how much more so we, little people like us, who are like grasshoppers compared to them, kin malim dakim, like little ants. How could a person be arrogant? I don't know. If you look at them, they were giants and they were humble. So how could we get away with being so arrogant? So he says, listen to my advice, take heed of my word. My words will be a cure, to remove the illness of one's soul from within. And so God should help you get peace, should grant you peace, and help you escape the net of your desire. What a person has to do is remember the giants that once were. And last week we gave many stories about the giants that were, their exceptional Torah knowledge, their piety. We learn from them. And looking at them, a person should look at himself and say, okay, what am I? What do I add up to? Then a person doesn't deceive himself to think how great a person is. So that goes back to his original allegory. We allow ourselves to become arrogant because we live in a bubble, because we don't let ourselves see beyond the bubble. Once we see what true greatness is, then we can really know our place. So long as we stay within our bubble. So we gave many examples for that. We gave the example of the kid in 8th grade. We gave the example of the kid in 12th grade. There are many times in life that people undergo this in a very acute fashion, where they feel they're great until they suddenly discover the bigger world. I'll tell you a story of how far it can go. There was once a child that was having breathing issues, and his parents couldn't figure out what the issue was. So they were told the top doctor in the country was a doctor in a certain hospital here in Jerusalem. And they went to that doctor, and they got the feeling that the doctor wasn't listening and wasn't following the real story. And every time they'd meet with the doctor, he'd just up the dosages of steroids to the child. And you have this child who's getting bigger and bigger and bloated, and he's not getting any better. And his breathing isn't getting any better. And the doctor, they're talking to him, and month after month, they get the feeling the doctor isn't registering, and they're trying to talk to him, and he's so arrogant that every time they try to reiterate, you know, we're telling you that this isn't working, he wouldn't listen. He was so arrogant. Now, why was he so arrogant? They found out why. Because every hospital they turn to around the country, whenever they try to speak to the person who was in charge of airways, they'd all say, we're his students. So he knew that in this country, everyone, all the doctors were basically his students. He was a top professor, so everyone's his student, so he knows. And so he never bothered listening. So the parents didn't know what to do. You know, if everyone else tells you he knows best, and he's not listening and he thinks he knows best, and he's not helping the child, he's just pumping him with medicine, what do you do? So fortunately for the parents, the father bumped into a friend of his who was Hasidish, and the friend said, come to my Rebbe, get a blessing from my Rebbe. So the father says, I'm not a Hasid. So he says, my Rebbe gives blessings to people who aren't Hasidim also. So he says, no. So he says, okay, if you're not going to go to my Rebbe, go to your Rebbe. If you're not getting anywhere, go to your Rebbe. So the father went to his Rebbe and said, maybe you have advice for me. What am I supposed to do? I can't find a doctor. And all the doctors say he knows best. So his Rebbe said, well, there's one person, there's a rabbi here in Jerusalem who knows all the top doctors. Why don't you give him a call and ask him if you're really seeing the top doctor? You know, maybe there's something we don't know. So he gives him a call, and the person tells him, yeah, I know all about this guy. He's the most arrogant of the doctors. You can never talk to him. He's very good when he gets it right, but you can't explain to him when he gets it wrong. Yeah. You're 100% right. So what do we do? He said, well, out in Tel Aviv, there's a guy who studied in Canada, and because he has other top positions, no one remembers that he's really the top specialist in breathing. But he's the top in that too. You should go to him. And you should just know that just this week, the doctor you're seeing was apprenticing by him on a certain operation, helping connect the children's breathing, some kind of operation to open up the whole breathing canal and restructure it. So 5 minutes later, they're on the phone with this doctor out in Tel Aviv. And the sweetest man, he's like, speaks gently on the phone, and he tells him, sure, I'll see your son, of course. He says, you could come over now. Ah, you're in Jerusalem. Nah, I'm leaving my office in an hour and a half. Don't rush. Don't drive yourself crazy. Come tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. And within a day, they're in by the top doctor. And he sits down and he looks at the kid and he says, you know, maybe I didn't get your picture right. Can I talk to the other doctor? So they call up the other doctor, you know, the original hotshot. And he says, well, I don't call anyone. If he wants to talk to me, he'll have to call me. And with that, he hangs up the phone. So they go back to this doctor in Tel Aviv. And the doctor says, no problem. Give me his number. I'll call him. No problem. Old man, he calls him up, he hears him out, and then he tells the parents, I think he's wrong. I don't think the child has any issue. And he was right. He performed the test and he proved to the parents that the child had, he had a very minor scar which was causing his breathing issues. And he said, when the kid grows up, the scar will pass. It's just a scar. They need zero medication. So you have a child that for months is walking around all swollen because the doctor was so arrogant he wasn't willing to listen to the parents. And in his little bubble, meaning in his realm, he was confident he was best. Because in his little bubble, he was the best. But there's something beyond the bubble. And we all tend to fall into that error where we like to deceive ourselves. And that's where the Magen Midvna says, if you just look at our history, look at the giants that were. Re'ema she'amar navi alav shalom. Look at what the prophet, peace be upon him, look what he said. V'amar o'ilichi nidmeti kisht mesvatayim anochi v'tochan mesvatayim anochi yoshev ki tamed chashen tzakot ru einai. Here you have the prophet. Remember the scene. You have the heavenly chariots. The prophet Yeshaya, Isaiah, is shown the workings of heaven. Right? Ma'aseh Merkava. One of the greatest secrets of the Torah. And when he's shown that, he hears a heavenly voice say, Et mi eshlach umi yelech lanu. Who can I send? The Jewish people need a leader. Who's going to guide them? So the Navi understands it's a hint for him, and he steps up to bat and says, Hineni shlacheini. I'm here, I'm ready. God, if you want me, send me. So among all the Jewish people, there's one man who was chosen out of the whole generation to be sent to guide the Jewish people. The Navi Yeshaya, Isaiah. This is his first prophecy. And yet, what does he say? How can I go? I'm a man whose lips are defiled, and I see God. And next to God, I don't feel worthy. So it's true, next to the Jewish people, he was the top prophet. But the Navi Yeshaya takes a step back from taking the position because he says, I see God, and then I look at myself, and then I say, wait a second, what am I? And that goes back to the idea we discussed a few months ago, how Moshe Rabbeinu was so humble. If Moshe himself writes in the Torah that he was the greatest prophet, so how could he be so humble? Remember? So we discussed the allegory of the barrel of water. Alex, you remember? No, barrel of water. A barrel of water can be very precious. If you're out in the Sahara, a barrel of water is very precious. You take that barrel of water and you pour it into the ocean and suddenly it's nothing. You have water all around it. What's the difference between that water and the other water? So it's all a question of where you gauge that barrel of water. Compared to the ocean, it's nothing. Out in the desert, it's something. So when a person takes himself, Moshe Rabbeinu, and he secludes himself from God, and he says, me and the people, you go out to the desert, okay, you're the giant. But if you see God as a part of the world, so then you say, and what am I? I'm another barrel of water. There's a lot of barrels of water out there. Okay, so that's the idea. He says over here that if a person looks at great people and sees their humility, then he can look back at himself and remind himself that he too should be humble. He goes on and on about humility, and I think there's good reason, because it's probably the most difficult trait to acquire. I think every person is plagued to some degree with that fallacious tendency to be arrogant. It stems from the fact that we wanna feel good about ourselves. So the easiest way to do that is to lie to ourselves and make believe that we are what we really are.
It's like an ingrained self-coddling that every human being. So that humbleness is something that's learned.
Very hard to achieve, yeah. Humility. Real humility is either learned or taught. Meaning, when is a person taught humility? When he's born with a terrible defect. I have a friend whose son was born where the skull never fused together. So what happens is, somewhere in pregnancy, the skull stopped fusing. So his face is split in two. I mean, there's skin covering it. But basically, you look at a person and you see a face that's like 1.5 the width of a regular face. He's got like eyes on both sides of it. They're like totally deformed. And initially they didn't think he'd live. They just celebrated his bar mitzvah a year or two ago. So the kid has a breathing tube and he underwent a lot of operations. By the time he was a half a year old, an operation on his heart, an operation on his kidneys, and a million things. But at the end of the day, his parents didn't give up on him. His parents didn't abort him, right? Like doctors for sure would have said, what are you letting this kid live for? And the kid is a happening kid. Yeah, they know. Yeah, they know.
Would you respect it? Would you be allowed to abort?
Why? When did they find out? In the 7th month? I mean, even if you found out earlier, ordinarily there have to be extenuating circumstances. From our perspective, abortion is prohibited.
No, the doctors thought that he wouldn't live. Then.
Even then. So in utero, he's living. Why should you stop that? I mean, you have to consult with the rabbi, but you have to have real cause. The fact that he won't live. Okay, so he won't live. Why is that a reason to abort him now? It could be that halachically, in utero, he's considered living. Even though after he'll be born, he's going to die. You have circumstances like that, where a child has all kinds of defects, where when he's born, he might not even be considered living. But so long as he's in utero, he can live, and he is living. You understand what I'm saying? Here, it's even worse than that, because you see, he lived. I mean, they celebrated his bar mitzvah 2-3 years ago. So when this kid goes, everywhere he goes, people stare at him. You've never seen something like this. So society teaches a person like that to be humble. Meaning there are circumstances, in Chazal's day, they discussed a person with boils. Everyone stayed away, right? A guy's covered with red boils all over and pus. Today, I think it's more rare. today.
Okay,
yeah. So I'm saying that's a humility that a person doesn't have to learn. There's humility that society forces on a person. When no one wants to sit next to him on a bus, he sort of gets the hint. And then his humility is forced upon him. But for most of humanity, when you're born somewhat regular, so then we all like to think we're exceptional, and we need to think we're exceptional, but then we get carried away with it. Meaning every one of us is exceptional. We're given a unique neshama, we're given unique strengths, and we have to cultivate them and develop them. But then we like to take it out of proportion. And every person walks around with a certain imagination of how exceptional they are. Mark Twain once said, when people compliment me, I'm always disappointed they didn't say more, and I'm a little embarrassed that I'm disappointed, but nonetheless I'm disappointed. Right? He was describing a human condition. He wasn't describing himself. So that's why we all have to contend with this. And I think that's why he gives this whole section such great length. He's going into so many examples and details because it's really hard to accomplish, to acquire humility. True humility. I mean, there's false humility, but true humility is hard.
What's false humility?
Look at me, I am so humble. I'm proud of this.
There are many types of false humility. One type is what Yechiel just said, where a person wants everyone to see how humble they are. Someone once said, we're a generation where when we do something in private, like you wake up early for Vasikin and you sneak out to davening and you keep doing something in the hope that one day you'll be discovered, right? So that's one type of false humility. But there are other types of false humility. There's false humility that's really a defect in the personality, where a person doesn't have the guts to do what he has to do, and then he coaches it in humility, where that's not humility. That's the lack of a spine, and that's not humility either. I'm saying, so people will sometimes, it's not only in humility, it's in all areas of religion, where people will sometimes make the religion their crutch for personal weakness. And humility is an example of that. That can also be. So a person is too shy to pick up his voice and ask a question. When humility is crippling, I think that's also a form of false humility. That's not the humility we're looking for here.